And you could tell by the way the priestesses looked at the baby and spoke among themselves that they thought they had found the reborn one at last. And the mother could tell this, too. She held the baby and never said a word. Well, so the next day we came back. And look here. The little bright-eyed baby lying in a cot of rushes, weeping and screaming, and all over its body, wheals and red rashes of fever, and the mother wailing louder than the baby, "Oh, oh, my babe hath the witch fingers on her." That's how she said it. The smallpox, she meant. In my village, too, they called it the witch fingers. But Kossil, she who is now the high priestess of the god-king, she went to the cot and picked up the baby. The others had all drawn back, and I with them. I don't value my life very high, but who enters a house where smallpox is? Oh, but she had no fear, not that one. She picked up the baby and said, "It has no fever." And she spat on her finger and rubbed at the red marks, and they came off. They were only berry juice. The poor silly mother had thought to fool us and keep her child. Manon laughed heartily at this. His yellow face hardly changed, but his sides heaved. So her husband beat her, for he was afraid of the wrath of the priestesses. And soon we came back to the desert. But each year one of the people of the place would return to the village among the apple orchards and see how the child got on. So 5 years passed, and then Thar and Kossil made the journey, with the temple guards and soldiers of the red helmet sent by the god-king to escort them safely. They brought the child back here, for it was indeed the priestess of the tombs reborn, and here it belonged. And who was the child, eh, little one?
Me, said Arha, looking off into the distance as if to see something she could not see, something gone out of sight. Once she asked, "What did the mother do when they came to take the child away?" But Manon did not know. He had not gone with the priestesses on that final journey. And she could not remember. What was the good in remembering? It was gone. All gone. She had come where she must come. In all the world she knew only one place. The place of the tombs of Atuan. In her first year there, she had slept in the big dormitory with the other novices, girls between 4 and 14. Even then, Manon had been set apart among the 10 wardens as her particular guardian, and her cot had been in a little alcove, partly separated from the long, low-beamed main room of the dormitory in the big house, where the girls giggled and whispered before they slept, and yawned and plaited one another's hair in the gray light of morning. When her name was taken from her, and she became Arha, she slept alone in the small house, in the bed and in the room that would be her bed and her room for the rest of her life. That house was hers, the house of the one priestess, and no one might enter it without her permission. When she was quite little still, she enjoyed hearing people knock submissively on her door and saying, "You may come in." And it annoyed her that the two high priestesses, Kossil and Thar, took their permission for granted and entered her house without knocking. The days went by, the years went by, all alike. The girls of the place of the tombs spent their time at classes and disciplines. They did not play any games. There was no time for games. They learned the sacred songs and the sacred dances, the histories of the Kargad lands, and the mysteries of whichever of the gods they were dedicated to, the god-king who ruled in Awabath, or the twin brothers Atwa and Wulua. Of them all, only Arha learned the rites of the Nameless Ones, and these were taught her by one person, Thar, the high priestess of the twin gods. This took her away from the others for an hour or more daily, but most of her day, like theirs, was spent simply working. They learned how to spin and weave the wool of their flocks, and how to plant and harvest and prepare the food they always ate, lentils, buckwheat ground to a coarse meal for porridge, or a fine flour for unleavened bread, onions, cabbages, goat cheese, apples, and honey. The best thing that could happen was to be allowed to go fishing in the murky green river that flowed through the desert a half mile northeast of the place, to take along an apple or a cold buckwheat bannock for lunch, and sit all day in the dry sunlight among the reeds, watching the slow green water run and the cloud shadows change slowly on the mountains. But if you squealed with excitement when the line tensed and you swung in a flat glittering fish to flop on the river bank and drown in air, then Mebeth would hiss like an adder.
"Be still, you screeching fool!"
Mebeth, who served the God King's temple, was a dark woman, still young but hard and sharp as obsidian. Fishing was her passion. You had to keep on her good side and never make a sound, or she would not take you out to fish again, and then you'd never get to the river except to fetch water in summer when the wells ran low. Well, that was a dreary business, to trudge through the searing white heat a half mile down to the river, fill the two buckets on their carrying pole, and then set off as fast as possible uphill to the place. The first 100 yards were easy, but then the buckets began to grow heavier, and the pole burned your shoulders like a bar of hot iron, and the light glared on the dry road, and every step was hard.